go, like they do in movies.
Clean it up. All right, let's do it.
All right.
Hello. Hi, and welcome to Mass Murder, a true crime self-care podcast. We're your hostesses, Avery.
And Nicole. And we're super excited to be bringing you our 25th episode. And we're here to tell you, in case you don't already know, about two things, masks and murder. First, we're going to dive into a little true crime story, and then we'll follow it up with a little feel-good self-care session. We're going to try out a new face mask and tell you what we think about it.
But before we get to it, we want to remind everyone that we definitely are not experts, so please don't take our comments as hard fact. We did our best to research the story, and to make it a bit more interesting, we will add in our commentary along the way.
Also, real quick before we get started, just want to follow up from last week when we were talking about the fingerprinting kit being left in Jody's car. We had one of our listeners reach out to us and let us know that they do have single-use out-of-plastic kits that can be used, and then after they're finished with it, they discard everything. But usually if they do fingerprints in an office, they have better multi-use brushes and powder that they use. So thank you, Kelly, for informing us.
All right, and today we're going to finish up our little billboard series with a story that uses billboards in a little different sense than our previous cases. This one is another that hits a little closer to home since it takes place in Virginia Beach, which we're both pretty familiar with. This case has been known as everything from a framing to a wrongful conviction to just flat out they got what they deserved and they're guilty. And just to preface things, we're going to talk about the murder of Jennifer Evans and the subsequent convictions of two Navy SEALs, Billy Joe Brown and Dustin Turner. So let's start off with a little bit about our convicted men's pasts, shall we?
Let's.
All right. Well, first up, we have Billy Joe Brown, who had a bit of a rough past. He got married as a teenager at the age of 17, and his wife was 14.
I don't understand how they can get married at the ages of 17 and 14. It's not the 1500s.
Yeah. It was the early 70s when they got married, and I'm going to assume that both of their parents had to sign off on it.
I actually wonder when that law even came to be.
Yeah.
Because I know for, depending on the state, like, some people qualify like a 12-year-old as an adult.
That's disgusting.
That may not be true anymore, but I know at least at some point it was. I do recall reading it.
Okay, well, that's bananas.
So anyways, maybe just a state thing, but that's unnecessary.
Yeah, so true. Well, just to get back to the story. So to my knowledge, they were already married, and Billy was seen beating his wife in front of a group of cops. So, like, I'm sure he was also beating her at home.
Yes, you wouldn't just all of a sudden take all your rage out in front of other people.
Let alone law enforcement?
Yeah, that would be crazy.
Yeah. So, prior to enlisting in the Navy, Billy was actually kicked out of the Coast Guard for assaulting a superior officer. And on that note, it's never really been explained or clear how someone with his past made it into the Navy SEAL program. There was a man named William who was in the Navy with Billy and was set to transfer into the SEAL program with him, who shared a barrack with him while they were stationed in Florida waiting for BUDS to start.
What? I'm sorry, what's BUDS?
I'm so glad you asked. BUDS actually stands for Basic Underwater Demolition SEAL Training. So, like, super clear, probably exactly what you're guessing, right?
For sure, definitely my first guess.
So BUDS is a 24-week orientation and introduction into the SEAL program that's designed to weed out the trainees that don't fit the bill. It starts off with a 3-week orientation, followed by 7 weeks of physical conditioning, which includes the infamous Hell Week, which is where trainees get 5.5 days of nonstop training, 4 hours of sleep for the entire week, and in total they run over 200 miles and do physical training for more than 20 hours per day.
So I'm going to go with that sounds impossible, and anyone that does that would be dead. So it's just not okay. That seems like a special type of torture.
Special type of torture, indeed. And, I mean, I feel like it's kind of clear why they are considered, like, the best of the best. Like, who you really want in your corner when things get, like, go to shit.
Yeah, because they really went to hell and back. Yeah. That sounds horrendous, but okay.
second. So Hell Week is actually when a lot of the recruits will do a drop on request, which is basically like them waving a white flag and saying, I can't do this anymore. It's signaled by them lining up their helmets along a post and ringing a ship bell 3 times. And then after Hell Week is over, they do 7 weeks of combat diving and finish off Buds with 7 weeks of land warfare, which is basically like just simulated war on the ground.
Sounds awful.
Yeah.
That is all.
That is all. Yeah. So anyway, Miss William guy's featured on some documentary I watched. It was either on Amazon or IMDb or a documentary. And he remembered that Billy would drink 2 40s of malt liquor every night, and then before he went to bed, he would religiously practice his martial arts.
Okay, that's so strange. He had to be so dehydrated. 2 40s every night and also, like, constant working out. He must have been chugging electrolytes.
One can only hope that he was actually chugging the electrolytes and drinking all the water. Otherwise, like, he'd be dead.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's already...
yeah.
He's already tempting fate by going through Buds.
Yeah.
Well. So... teach their own.
Yeah. So anyway, one time William asked Billy how long he'd been practicing martial arts and if he'd ever had to use it, you know, maybe in like self-defense or something. So William recounts Billy's harrowing answer. Billy said that he actually used it on a guy that was interested in his wife. He found him and just started beating him. The man begged him to stop, but Billy just kept beating him anyway. Eventually, it got to the point where the man stopped begging Billy and started begging God for mercy.
That's so sad. Just like, why? So angry.
Well, probably anger management issues. Yeah. So unfortunately, back in 1994, during the SEAL program, the trainers only saw the recruits during training, and whatever they did in their like off time had no impact on whether or not they continued through the rigorous program. And so the trainers could really only judge Billy based on what they saw, which was, you know, him trying his damnedest, pushing himself to excel in the program. And despite the very little sleep that he was getting and his alcohol consumption, Billy was actually able to perform on a very high level. Now, we're going to switch gears to our other Navy SEAL trainee, Dustin, a.k.a. Dusty Turner, whose background is basically the complete opposite of Billy's. Dusty's family had a history of joining the military, making it a pretty obvious choice for him. So obvious, in fact, that he joined the Navy at 17 before he had even graduated from high school. He was a high school athlete, was in the Boy Scouts, and was active in the junior league of his church. And since he had been scuba diving for a few years, the Navy seemed like a good fit for him. It wasn't until after he completed his Navy basic training that he applied for and was accepted to the Navy SEAL program. And at 18 and a half, he was one of the youngest recruits to ever be accepted. A childhood friend of Dusty's named Katie was shocked to learn that he was going to become a SEAL. He was physical and he was a great swimmer. He had all the tools to do the job, but, quote, there wasn't an aggressive bone in his body, end quote.
Yeah, so then they really were the exact opposite. Dusty and Billy were the exact opposite. One had anger management issues, the other, not so much. And also, I think it seems kind of like Dusty grew up as like the golden boy. He did all of the right things, checked all the right boxes, and Billy was like the rough and tumble guy, always down for a good fight. So, like, polar opposites, but became best friends.
Well, they actually met during SEAL training, and they met because they both got pulled from Hell Week for injuries. They had to go into physical rehab, and then they'd be able to re-enter the training. And it's when they were going through rehab that their friendship really blossomed. Since they didn't have much else to do, they started hanging out and partying a lot, and then when they were able to roll back or re-enter training, it was at the same time.
Okay, so like of circumstance. Their friendship was of circumstance.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know, almost like the butterfly effect. Because one thing happened, something else happened.
Sure. Okay.
It's probably the wrong analogy. Definitely the wrong analogy.
I get what you mean, though.
But yeah, no. Now keep in mind that a big part of SEAL training is to build a team mentality. And just, you know, a little nugget, Dusty and Billy were designated as swim buddies, who are to always have each other's back, and they're never supposed to be more than 6 feet from each other. And that's so that they can protect each other and help each other out when it's needed. And then if anything happens to your swim buddy, it's your responsibility to help them out, or like it's your fault that it happened right. If you were too far away.
Yeah. Okay. Where's your buddy?
Where's your buddy?
Yeah, I'm thinking from kindergarten, but same thing.
Yeah. So we're just going to go ahead and stick a pin in that for the time being.
Dusty says that they stuck to this mentality in their everyday lives as well. They were pretty much inseparable from the time they started hanging out. They had a little clique of friends, you know, like the guys who want to push the envelope. In 1995, Dusty and Billy were stationed at Little Creek Amphibious Base at 4AP Hill. They were about to complete their SEAL training and decided to go out to nearby Virginia Beach to celebrate. Also out in Virginia Beach on the night of June 18th was 21-year-old Jennifer Evans. Jennifer was a pre-med undergrad at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. She was vacationing with some friends in Sandbridge, which is a neighborhood in Virginia Beach. Jennifer and her two friends, Andrea and Michelle, decided to go out for a night on the town and ended up at the Bayou Nightclub. This hangout was located in the Radisson Hotel on 19th Street, but is no longer open. Around midnight, Jennifer met Dustin, or Dusty, who at the time was 20 years old. Andrea grew up in the area and was really used to guys pretending to be SEALs just to get girls. When she questioned Dusty about if he really was a SEAL, he simply showed him his ID that listed SEAL Team 4 as his address. Jennifer and Dusty were really hitting it off and just chatting all night long, but her friends wanted to leave. Andrea had a headache, and the girls decided to go to a nearby coffee shop. Jennifer was having a great time and just didn't want to go. She wanted to keep talking to Dusty. The girls agreed that she could stay, but she couldn't go anywhere else, and that they would be back in about an hour to get her when the club closed. Dusty was also having a great time with Jennifer, so he tried to ditch his best buddy. And this is for two reasons. One, he wanted to keep hanging out with Jennifer until her friends got back. And two, Billy was way too drunk and ruining their conversations. I mean, we've all been there. Someone just kind of...
Yeah, getting in the way. Yeah. Being a cock block.
Yeah, that's what I was like, trying to think of a better thing to say. But yeah, cock blocking him.
Yeah.
But anywho, Dusty tried to get him to catch a ride home with a different friend. But it was a girl that Billy used to date, so he wasn't too keen on the idea because that could also go badly. So fast forward towards the end of the night, around closing time for the Bayou. Andrea and Michelle came back to the bar as planned, but Jennifer was nowhere to be found. From what we've read, they waited until morning and then reported Jennifer as missing to the authorities, letting them know that they were looking for a Navy SEAL named Dusty.
So police were actually able to track down Dusty Turner and his friend Billy Joe Brown pretty quickly. Both men denied knowing anything and insisted that the last time they saw Jennifer, she was alive and they had left her at the bar. The case quickly gained so much publicity that the FBI joined the search and even interviewed Dustin and Billy. And both of them were actually cleared by the FBI. But Virginia Beach Police Department was convinced that the two either knew something or had something to do with Jennifer's disappearance. They continued to make trips to Fort AP Hill to question them. And about 8 or 9 days later, the Virginia State Police came to Fort AP Hill along with the Virginia Beach Police Department to pick up Dusty and Billy. They were going to meet with the FBI and they had agreed to take polygraph tests, which they don't pass. When they inform Billy that the test indicates he knows something, he shuts down and says that he's not going to say anything else. But when they tell Dusty, they tell him that Jennifer's family just wants closure. They want to know what happened. So he asks to speak to his warrant officer before he says anything else. And a warrant officer is kind of like a senior official in the military. Sometimes they can command attachments, units, activities, vessels, blah, blah, blah. Or they can lead, coach, train, or counsel their subordinates. Which, based on what's happening here, I'm going to go ahead and guess that's the case.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. So Dusty tells his warrant officer everything and asks him what he should do.
Yeah, he wants a little guidance. Yeah.
The warrant officer tells him to just tell the detectives everything and that it'll all be okay. So Dusty took that as, you know, getting an order from his superior and laid everything out for the detectives, even drawing them a map of where the body was. He admitted that he and Jennifer were sitting in the front seat of his car while chatting, and they were parked outside the bayou waiting for her friends to return. Billy then approached the young couple, getting into the back seat of Dusty's car. Then Billy started messing with Jennifer and playing with her hair, but she swatted his hand away, saying something along the lines of, like, I don't know you, don't touch me, something like that, which I would do.
Yeah, understandable.
So Dusty said that Billy reached into the front seat and choked Jennifer before he could even comprehend what was happening. Jennifer's arms stayed at her side, and she never even had time to reach up to pull Billy's arms off of her. When he finally realized what was happening, Dusty tried to pull Billy's arms off of Jennifer, grabbing at his elbow and prying at his fingers. But Billy just yelled at him to drive the fucking car. We gotta go. When he realized that she was limp, he panicked and did what Billy said. Dr. Gina Vincent of the University of Massachusetts says, you know, he's in shock. I'm not surprised that he would just comply with what Billy's telling him to do, especially since in the moment, Billy's become a very scary person. You know, he just killed someone.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, coupled with the fact that Billy's his best friend, but someone he's also been trained to protect and never leave behind, right? And, I mean, going back to what the good doctor was saying, in a moment like that, like, I can't imagine you're really firing on, what am I trying to say? All,
you're not thinking rationally.
Yeah, what is that? Firing on all cylinders. Firing on all cylinders.
I've never heard that phrase before.
Really? Not really. Anyways, yes, thinking correctly. Thinking clearly. Because, I mean, you're in a new situation. You're freaking out. Your adrenaline's running.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention they've been drinking.
Yeah. I mean, that is a crazy moment. No one, I don't think anyone could accurately describe what they would do in that situation without having been in it.
Yeah, until you're actually in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
So, yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah. So Dusty confessed that they drove to a wooded area in Newport News Park, but because they didn't have anything to dig a hole with, they covered her body with sticks, leaves, debris, you know, the typical stuff that you find in the woods.
Right, right.
Yeah. Her body would stay there until Dusty's confession when he told the investigators what happened and showed them where Jennifer's body was. During the 8 or 9 days before his confession, Dusty's mom said she knew something was wrong, but she wasn't sure what, because he called her every day.
The two have worked so closely during their trainings and sometimes have had to do things like draw maps, so he's familiar with Dusty's writing style. Knowing that his partner and best friend ratted him out, Billy decided to flip the script. He gave the police a different story. At first, he said they both did it. The two had a history of group sex, and that could have been a believable scenario. But then he made up a different story, that Dusty had killed her before he even got to the car. At one point, he claimed that Dusty jumped out of the back seat and exclaimed, "I killed her!" Which, this story makes the least sense to me since Dusty's car only had two doors. Little complicated to just jump out
of a back seat.
Right, just like lean forward and like,
it's like a weird maneuver, like, your aerial body. Drive, yeah.
Yeah, but whatever.
Dive.
Details. Billy also admitted during one of his stories that he got into the car and undressed and then fondled the corpse. Saying at this point that he still had nothing to do with her death.
But that.
Yep, it's so gross in oh so many ways. Obvious lie if you're going there. Like, if that's the truth you're gonna tell, what did you really do?
Yeah.
So, not gonna believe him. But so at this point, the cops have, what, like two or three different versions of events? This is...
And that's just from Billy.
Yeah, getting a little insane. So the seats of Dusty's 1990 Geo Storm didn't configure the way that was described by Billy in his story. In the version of Billy's story that they were going with, he said that Dustin strangled Jennifer, but admitted to fondling her body after she was dead, which is the explanation for his DNA being on her body. He said that they put her into the back seat to transport her to the dump location. While she was back there, he said she was bleeding from the nose and mouth. Police had Billy draw a diagram of what actually happened. If you look at the picture, it kind of looks like a kid drew it, to be honest. It's stick figures, and Jennifer appears to be half in the front seat, where, like, her legs were in the front seat and half in the back seat, where, like, her head and torso was, like, kind of hanging back.
It just feels like if it's the two grown men in the front seat, and, like, at this point it's a dead body.
Yeah.
Why not just have the whole thing in the back seat? Like, what's the point of having the legs up there? They're the longest part of the body. They're going to be in the way.
Yeah, in the way. And also, like, if that's true, zero remorse. Because if you were uneasy with the fact that you just killed someone, you wouldn't want the body super close to you.
Yeah, no. You want that as far away from you as possible.
Right. You want to ignore it. You want to just get away with it. Move on with your life. Like, but no. Just going to hang out with the person that... You maybe killed, maybe didn't kill. Your friend maybe killed, but maybe he didn't kill. Maybe you both did it.
At this point, who knows?
But, I mean, so, here's the thing, actually. There's plenty of evidence that excludes Billy's versions, plural, of events. There's no evidence that Jennifer was ever in the backseat of Dusty's car. There's also no evidence for his claim that she was between the front and back seats or bled on the back seat. So, easily denied. Well, easily proven wrong.
Yeah.
Which, you know, sounds like a liar to me. Would you think that Billy's ever-changing stories would be a good thing for Dusty's case?
I mean, perhaps? I would think so, right? Right. I mean, this guy's clearly lying if he's telling you, like, umpteen different stories about what happened.
Yeah. You have one guy that keeps changing a story. You have another guy that told one story, showed the police where the body actually was. Kind of seems like he did the right thing.
Eventually.
Someone is believable, but, like, there's someone that actually has some level of...
remorse?
Yes, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
And even after having been arrested for the murder, Dusty thought that the police would be able to prove how Jennifer died, where she died, and confirm that his story was, in fact, the truth. John Frank, a reporter at the time, remembers asking the prosecutor who killed Jennifer, but he wouldn't answer. The prosecutor is quoted in the documentary saying, quote, "In terms of when someone is guilty or not guilty, if you participate, the law says you are guilty," end quote. Yeah, just let that sit with you.
Marinate.
So what did the prosecution do? They developed a story or theory in which Dusty and Billy abducted Jennifer with the intention of sexually assaulting her. It's an abduction because in their theory, Dusty lured Jennifer with one story, which in reality, he was just luring her away to get her to engage with group sex with him and Billy. So because the murder took place during another felonious act, aka abduction, it's able to be charged as felony murder.
All right. All that being said, let's go ahead and jump forward to the preliminary hearing. It was televised, which was allowed in the state of Virginia at the time. And Billy's defense attorney said that Billy held Jennifer down while Dusty undressed her. And then when Jennifer began to fight, that's when Dusty choked her. Even further, he said that the two men conspired on what they would do to Jennifer's body after she was dead. You know, as in necrophilia.
Oh, my Lord.
Because of this, they were charged with intent to defile with an animate object, which is Billy's hand.
Wait, but Billy's hand, that's one person. One. So why would Dusty be charged with that? You know?
What's the word that I'm looking for? It's accomplice, maybe?
Maybe, yeah, just like helping cover it up and all.
Okay. And like he was there when it happened, and according to this, they
didn't stop it.
Yeah, well, and they like conspired together about what was going to go down.
Right.
So I did see that the sexual charges against Dusty were dropped before the preliminary hearing, but that didn't stop the media from running with all these new facts. The charge was listed in the media as being intent to defile with an inanimate object rather than an animate object. So just a fun fact.
Okay.
Yeah. So when it came time to get to the actual, like, full-on trial, Billy and Dusty were tried separately. Probably because their stories didn't line up and they were pointing the finger at each other. So I guess we should say, like, full-on trials.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably up to their defense, saying that their clients had a better chance separately than together.
But, yeah, I don't know if it's up to the defense or if it's up to the prosecution.
I thought it was up to the... I don't know.
I feel like it would be up to the prosecution because they're like, well, I'm going to prosecute you on this charge because I've got a strong case. But I'm going to prosecute you on this charge. But in this, I don't know. Lawyers, let us know.
Yeah, agree to disagree. One of us is right.
I don't know.
Maybe it's together. It's collaborative.
Yeah, maybe. So, the prosecution's whole case was built off of Billy's story, the version of the story that implicates them both. And they had, like we said earlier, they had Billy draw a diagram of the scene and admitted it into evidence for court. But if they had physically tried to recreate the scene as told by Billy, they would have realized that it was physically impossible. Cam McDonald, a graphic engineer, tried to take Billy's drawing and recreate it accurately within a quarter of an inch. One of the technical aspects that he ran into was that Billy's drawing showed Jennifer's body as half in the front seat and half in the back seat, but the space between the two seats was only 7 inches. Now, let's go back to Billy's pre-trial interviews for just a second. Or maybe a minute. I don't know. We'll see how long it actually takes. He was disappointed because the detective just walked away, and liars have a tendency to change their stories over time. They usually can't remember the lie exactly, so their story ends up changing over and over, whereas when someone's telling the truth, their version of the story will remain consistent. Another thing that bothered him was that during the interview, the detective gave Billy his statement that he had previously given and asked him to read it, which would, you know, let him remember his story.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, shouldn't the detective go under review? I mean, something needs to be done. This guy is not following protocol.
Here's what you already told me. Can you take a look at it and then tell me it again?
Yeah. I just want to refresh your memory of what you told me. Is it still true?
Yeah.
Cool.
This is the version of the story that we're going with. Can you please just reread it and make sure you, you know, want to go with it?
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So another thing that helps to solidify the fact that Billy was just a big old liar is that there's a woman named Anitra who was a friend of both Billy and Dusty from before the murder. So, you know, she was someone who grew up in Virginia Beach and who seemed to know them pretty well. Anitra would get letters from Billy after he was incarcerated, and she remembers that sometimes she would read the letter or read a letter and then just kind of a huh moment. But then she would go back to read a letter that she had received from him like the week before, and then the two stories just didn't match up. So she's like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah. Inconsistencies everywhere. Prior to his trial, Billy was denied bail. Justin's attorney, we presume, fearing the same result for Dusty, did not request bail.
But, like, what the fuck? Not even gonna try?
I don't know. Although it was allowed in courtrooms at the time, the judge denied media presence in the courtroom during Billy's trial. One of the detectives recalled taking Billy to Henrico County Jail before his trial. When he got him to a cell, he asked Billy if there was anything he needed. Billy smiled and responded, a beer and a babe.
Really? Like, first of all, you're disgusting.
Yep.
But, like, you also clearly have zero remorse about what happened to Jennifer.
Yes. I think that's an accurate description at this point.
Like, I'm not sure if I want to vomit or punch him in the face. Like, which feeling is stronger?
Punch him in the face.
And then vomit on him.
Yeah, both.
Okay, cool.
Why choose?
Why not both?
All throughout Billy's trial, he was insistent that it was Dusty that killed Jennifer and that he was the innocent bystander. Dusty's dad said, with all the media coverage and quotes and such flying around, you would have thought it was Dusty that was on trial instead of Billy. Despite Billy's continued story that it was Dusty that committed the crime, Billy was found guilty of all the charges and sentenced to a total of 72 years. Dustin was tried 3 months after Billy's trial was complete. His trial may have been delayed because Dusty had a different judge than Billy did. His judge actually allowed cameras in the courtroom, unlike Billy's. Now, we are going to assume that the media was allowed in Dusty's and not Billy's trial because Billy went first. So the general public wouldn't know all of the details of it and then possibly sway the jury before Dusty's trial.
No, yeah. I'm with you.
Okay, great. One of the things that bothered Dusty's cousin about the trial was that the jury wasn't taken or even allowed to see the car, aka the crime scene. Instead, a mock car, which was essentially the equivalent of just the interior seats, was brought in. She said the prosecutor was flailing about, almost mockingly exclaiming about all the space that was in that car. But of course, there's space. I mean, of course, there's no door, no roof, no frame. What is there to limit your movements?
Nada.
Right. You know, like where the car would be.
Yeah.
So when police physically went through the car with a fine-tooth comb, there was no evidence to corroborate Billy's story. He said that Jennifer had been bleeding from the mouth and nose in the back seat, yet there was no DNA evidence collected. No blood, no saliva, no hair, no nothing. The prosecution continued with the story that the two men had a ruse going to lure young women into situations where they would participate in group sex. They even had other SEALs testify that that was a thing the two did. Dusty would meet and talk to a girl and report back to Billy what their chances were of them having a threesome. The theory that the prosecution argued followed along with Billy's account of the evening, that Jennifer left the club with Dusty and they met up with Billy with the intention of convincing her to engage in group sex with them. When she refused, they abducted her. So they kidnapped her, and then the death, even if accidental, would be first-degree murder.
Okay. Well, let's take just a second to talk about Dusty's defense. His attorneys were Dick Bridges and Steve Mahung. One thing that bothers me about the defense is that despite the case being very prominent in the media and being plastered all over the place, and with all the rumors flying around from Billy's case, they didn't request a change of venue, which the prosecution had anticipated. And even further, they didn't object to a single one of the prosecution's jury selections, which I'm guessing also means that they didn't try to bring in like a jury from a different county or anything.
Which I feel like is, probably not then, but that's a thing now, right? You're not supposed to have a jury of just people from the local area because, especially in, like, a small town, they already know. They know the news. They know this people, probably.
And they probably already have an opinion on what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny, one thing that this little tidbits just kind of made me think about is the show How to Get Away with Murder. And how they talk about how you want to make sure the jury is made up of people who are going to be sympathetic to your client and won't have any, like, implicit bias against them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's not like Dusty's defense attorneys came cheap. It's not like they were, like, court-appointed. So much so that the first 24 to 30 hours of Dusty's attorney's fees totaled $36,000.
What? How is that possible?
Dusty's dad gave the attorney all of his cash and agreed to pay him $1,000 a month for the rest of his life.
Oh, what a dad that would, like, literally do anything to help their kid. That is so sweet.
Yeah. But anyway, Dick motioned that the murder charges should be dropped since there had been no evidence of abduction presented. And without the evidence of abduction, you know, the underlying felony, the murder charge was unfounded. The judge denied the motion on the grounds that Jennifer didn't leave the club with the intent to be killed. But, sorry, does anyone ever go out with the intent to be killed?
No one ever goes out. Like, you know, when someone gets, I don't know, robbed or stabbed while they're out running, they're not like, you know what I want to do tonight? I want to start running, and then I want to get killed.
I want someone to chase me when I go for a run tonight. I really feel like it'll help me with my endurance.
Yeah, just... Yep, no, that's not, like, not, that was not even a necessary thing for him to say.
No, nobody ever goes out with the intent to be a victim of any crime.
No, that's so true.
Yeah, I feel like that's, like, an unfounded thing to say.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Fucking ridiculous. But, in the end, Dustin was found guilty of both the abduction and the murder and was sentenced to 82 years in prison. The jury foreman later said that most of the jury didn't believe that Dusty had anything to do with Jennifer's actual murder, but because he was there and involved in helping to cover it up and to help dispose of the body, that they didn't want to simply let him walk away, that he had to pay a price.
Yeah, but 82 years is not the price.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if
He actually cooperated with the police.
Yeah, and I don't know if the jury necessarily... has anything to do with the sentence, more as they just have the, like, guilty or not guilty job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, we find him guilty of these charges and then the judge sentences.
Yeah, I think you're right.
How it works. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that being said, since Dusty wasn't charged with any lesser charges, they were stuck with one option to serve justice on Jennifer's behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And something that we do want to point out about both Billy and Dusty's trials is that at the time the two were charged, there was no parole in the state of Virginia, meaning that they would both spend the rest of their lives in prison. You know, Billy, who got 72 years in prison, was 23 when he was sentenced, and Dusty, who got 82 years, was 20 when he was sentenced.
Yeah, I still don't understand it.
Maybe because the prosecution was going with Billy's version of events? Rather than...
Which is also insane.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Parole was abolished in 1995, the same year that Dusty and Billy were both charged. And between 1995 and 2000, jurors in Virginia were not allowed to be informed that parole had been abolished. And this period is known as the Fishback Gap. And less than 300 people who are still incarcerated today... fall within this gap.
You know, as someone from Virginia, I've never heard of this. Yeah. And it blows my mind.
Yeah.
That seems so wrong on so many different levels.
Yet not letting the jury know that parole's off the table.
Right. I mean, why? I mean, that just seems nefarious. There's just no other way around it.
Yeah. I think that there are acts in motion and, like, things in place to, like, go back and correct the fishback gap years, which is why there aren't more people that are still incarcerated from that time.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, like, I don't understand why, like, they couldn't know.
No. Okay. Dick and Steve assured Dusty's mother that during the appeals, they were going to get Dusty off. His stepfather agreed. They said they'd get him out during the appeals, but we're going to need another $40,000. But his mother...
Sorry, that's a lot of money.
Oh. She was like, what?
It's a lot of money. Yeah. I was drinking a sip of wine. Like, ugh.
It's kind
of
like a stick up. Like, I can help, but...
Yeah.
I'm gonna need all your money.
I hope that neither of his parents were teachers.
Oh, yeah, I have no idea. But so at this point, his mother did not trust them anymore, especially since Steve pulled her aside and asked her if she realized how much money could be made from the story. So, obviously, doesn't have great intentions. And at some point, we know that the legal counsel did change just, like, throughout the years, but we're not actually sure of the exact timeline or how many times they changed, but that might be a good indication of why.
For sure.
But at this point, she didn't care about any of it. She just wanted her son out of prison. Dusty and his family filed every appeal that they could find. Some his father even said hadn't been used since the War of 1812. Now, another thing, we're unclear if this was literally or if he was just trying to emphasize the links that they were going to. But regardless, long time. Fast forward to 1999. Billy was transferred from Keene Mountain Correctional Facility to the highest security prison in Virginia, called Red Onion Correctional Center. I can't get through it. It's hilarious. Red Onion. Cool. I would like to know the backstory of that.
It's because all of the inmates who go there cry every day. Like they've just cut a giant red onion.
But just a red one, not yellow.
No, red's the worst. I don't know. I'm sure I'm making it up.
So yeah, Red Onion Correctional Center. Okay. In March of 1999, he became a born-again Christian and decided to write letters to both his attorney and his mother. He confessed that he was the killer of Jennifer Evans and that it was Dusty's story, not his, that contained the truth. His former cellmate remembers that when he went back to Keene Mountain, or came back to Keene Mountain, he was not the same person. He was completely different, being a, quote, Christ insanity Christian, spouting it all the time, end quote. Later, he even wrote to Dustin's mother saying that he was the one that committed the murder, proving Dusty's innocence. At the time, Virginia law only allowed new evidence to be brought in or brought forth 21 days after trial. So Dusty's only hope was to receive clemency from the governor.
Are you kidding me? 21 days? That doesn't give you any time at all. You get a longer return policy when shopping.
Oh, I know, right?
I think I get like 3 or 4 months for this.
Yeah, no, it makes absolutely no sense. Like 21 days seems really random and short. But from what I can tell by looking at the circuit criminal manual, biological evidence can be submitted if it's newly discovered or not previously tested. But as far as non-biological evidence, all I could find was that was the writ of actual innocence. So it's just kind of gray, but does not include a lot. Mm. When the governor was contacted, he said that he would take a look at the case, but would likely need to speak to the state's prosecuting attorney first. The state's attorney is seen in an interview saying that Billy's testimony didn't put Dustin in jail. So why would his testimony after 8 years get him out? Now, this puts the state in a tough spot. If they accept Billy's new testimony, what's to stop other felons all of a sudden confessing to get their co-conspirators out of jail? And, even just saying that out loud, I understand that to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But come on.
Yeah.
Like, it just, maybe it's true. Maybe people just don't deserve to be in jail sometimes.
Maybe.
We've all read stories about it. But so the clemency was eventually denied because a new type of appeal was passed, the writ of actual innocence.
Oh, what you just talked about.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Tell me about it. Which is the one-time shot for felons to present new evidence of their case, being exactly what they needed. Dusty's attorney filed for this appeal.
So Dustin's writ of actual innocence case took place on May 28th, 2008. And obviously, at this point, it was a very popular and widely known case. Billy would be attending as a witness. And Dusty said, you know, he'd be a whole new type of witness because he'd finally be there telling the truth.
Oh, yeah. You know, I hadn't even thought about it. Like, how hurt Dusty must have been at this point that Billy just
stabbed him in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again.
Yeah. Well, and Dusty was right. It was a whole new Billy. Billy's there. He's quoting his learnings from the Bible, specifically Psalms 151, and he's talking about how you must repent before God so your heart can be clean. And Billy said that after turning to God, he knew immediately what he had to do. He didn't want to, but he knew he had to tell the truth. When he's asked why he didn't want to, he kind of ironically says, well, how would you like to stand up before the world and tell them you're not only a murderer and a liar, but that you betrayed your best friend?
That's a good point. Shouldn't have done it.
Yeah. All of a sudden, he's got a conscience.
Yeah.
So then Billy's asked what the Bible says about confessing your sins. Cue more Bible quoting and talking about making his heart clean, yada, yada, yada. He also says that he didn't want to be there, but he knew in his heart that it was the right thing to do. Ugh.
Yeah. Blah.
Billy admits that he's glad that he was arrested. He says that if he had been let free, he probably would have become a much worse person.
And that's probably very true.
Yeah. During questioning, he's challenged with the fact that he had no problem calling someone else, you know, Dusty, out for going against their code of conduct and their code of brotherhood, while in fact, he was the one who was lying through his teeth the whole time. Billy admits, yeah, that at the time he had no conscience. So when asked if his concern is more with himself than it is with trying to clear the name of someone else, he says, no, it's to glorify Jesus Christ, to obey and come clean. Clearly still a fucking psychopath, right? Ugh. Because when asked if it concerns him if Dusty will be set free from his testimony, he first jokes around and says, well, I'm sure he'll be pretty happy. But then goes on to say, I could care less. And like, it's with such callous forcefulness. Certainly not the way Jesus would have said it. No, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Not exactly what I would call godly, but proves he doesn't have remorse even at this point. And I'm kind of with you. I'm struggling to figure out if he's a psychopath or a sociopath. Because sociopath, right, I see with like the impulsive anger, you know, like when he killed Jennifer. But then I see psychopath because he doesn't feel remorse for it. So, I don't know. At the end, I kind of feel like sociopath gives him a break. So, psychopath it is?
Psychopath it is. Now, during his questioning, he's asked if Dustin was the murderer of Jennifer Evans, and Billy admits no. He's further prodded. Did Dustin assist in the killing of Jennifer Evans? Again, no. Did Dustin encourage you in killing Jennifer Evans? No. And with the final question being, just so we're clear, did you in fact kill Jennifer Evans? Billy says yes. The attorney then asks, is there any doubt in your mind about that? Billy says no. The case took place before a 3-judge panel, and the majority ruled in Dusty's favor. His conviction had been overturned. At this point, things are looking up for Dusty, and he's obviously on an emotional high.
But then things took a turn for the worst. The Court of Appeals overturned the decision. Initially, the court wasn't sure that Jennifer was killed in the parking lot. But now, with Billy's new testimony, they accepted that she was killed in the parking lot. And they ruled that a rational juror could infer that Dustin was still guilty of abduction by deception with the intent to defile, and therefore guilty of felony murder. Former homicide detective Terry DeGelder argues, if you're going to cause harm to someone or kill someone, you don't go showing your driver's license or telling everyone where you live, which is exactly what Dusty had done that night.
And it's also exactly why we have our rule.
Mm-hmm.
If any of our friends want to go off with someone we've never met before.
Yeah. Safety first. So Terry further argues that if you're in a malicious mindset, you don't make arrangements for your friends to get a ride home with another friend. And you likely aren't going to tell the person who you're going to be abducting's friends to go ahead and come back for her in an hour.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it just signs point to He didn't do all of these things. So how could they just make this brand new theory up on the spot without it ever actually being placed in front of the jury? How could something that's never been presented as evidence now be used against him? These are the questions that were running through Dustin's head when he appealed his ruling to the Supreme Court of Virginia. He felt like they would have to see his innocence. He would be heading home within a matter of weeks or months. But the Supreme Court denied his appeal and upheld the Court of Appeals' decision. Now, Dustin Turner would spend the rest of his life in prison. When asked how he feels about coming forward and confessing despite this, Dusty says, quote, "Am I glad that I told detectives? Of course. To think that the Evans family, if they went this whole time and still today had no idea what happened to their daughter. I mean, you know, there's no way I could have lived with that anyway. So I guess I had to. Of course, I had to come clean. I had to tell them what happened," end quote.
So he clearly had remorse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. He actually felt awful for what happened, whether or not he did it, like, with his own hands. David Sullivan with the Virginians for Judicial Reform said, quote, "In the end, Billy Joe Brown got exactly what he wanted. He got Dustin Turner in jail for the rest of his life, and in his own eyes, he achieved redemption by telling the truth," end quote.
So like we said, basically he's still a psychopath.
Yeah, which I don't understand why he would want Dustin to be in jail forever.
Oh, it's vindiction. Like, oh, you stabbed me in the back, so you're getting yours.
Yeah, that's a lot. But
it's 100% because Dusty came clean and was like, "Oh, like this is what happened. Billy murdered her. I helped hide the body."
Yeah, you're supposed to be my best friend. You're supposed to have my back at all times. Mm-hmm. Now I'm gonna really screw you over.
Yeah,
interesting. Yeah, okay. According to a 2014 Richmond Times-Dispatch article, the state law that the Supreme Court used to uphold the appellate court's decision—you know, the part that says a rational juror could still find. Had its wording changed from could to would. Dustin and his family, along with their legal team, decided to petition for a conditional pardon from, at the time, Governor McDonnell. The writ of actual innocence is a one-time appeal, so Dustin could not file it again. His only option was to ask that the governor correct the things that the court could not with the pardon. I bet at this point you're wondering, how did the billboards tie into this story?
I actually was.
Well, Paul Cuddy? Right?
Sure.
Yep. All right. Well, Paul Cuddy, who in 2014 was a treasurer for the group of Virginians for Judicial Reform, paid for billboards to be put up along Interstate 95 and 64 in Richmond, Virginia. They had messages urging Governor Bob McDonnell to pardon Dustin in this case. While we haven't been able to find what the billboards actually said, I do know that they were up for at least 3 days. Unfortunately, McDonnell's administration told Dustin's then attorney David Hargett that he decided to neither grant nor deny the petition for a pardon. He did, however, ask the state parole board to perform a more than thorough review of Dustin's case in light of the information within the petition. In 2015, Dustin surpassed having spent half of his life in prison. Dustin's petition is the longest pending in Virginia history. It is expected that our current governor Northam will make a decision on his clemency when he leaves office in 2022.
So one more year. So, Dusty's family has created a website to provide details of this case and to bring public awareness to getting Dusty out of prison. And they actually shared an update about Dusty in May 2020, in light of the whole coronavirus thing.
Mm-hmm.
He has graduated from the vocational horticulture course offered at the Greensill Correctional Center, and he even gave the commencement speech at graduation. He was then offered the opportunity to continue with the advanced course, and early in 2020, prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, he was hired as an aide to the course to help other students learn everything from basic sustainable gardening, plant identification, and propagation to greenhouse operations, soil amendments, and chemical safety. He found the job rewarding, and it continued to teach him even though he was the teacher. As of May 2020, all programs, educational and otherwise, were shut down, visitation was canceled, all food was being brought to the cells, and employees were required to wear the Department of Corrections sneeze guards. This is all to say that there was virtually no movement around the prison to try and limit the spread of the virus, you know, as expected.
Yeah, but sucks.
It sucks so much. Then towards the end of May, the National Guard went to test every staff member and incarcerated person. When the results came in, they were put under even greater restrictions. Hundreds of people at this institution have tested positive, and Dusty assumed it was only a matter of time before he also contracted COVID-19. The Virginia General Assembly recently passed legislation in an attempt to correct the unfair sentencing practices known as the Fishback Gap. Refresher, it's, you know, how jurors weren't allowed to be told that parole was abolished.
Yep. Still insane.
Yeah. So as of May 2020, for the first time during his incarceration, Dusty was now eligible for parole. And even though this might seem like an exciting possibility to most, Dusty ascertains that it is not suitable or a just remedy for his wrongful conviction. And it means that he would still be considered a felon and wouldn't have the right to vote and would have to list it on any housing or job applications. His family's created various petitions on moveon.org and change.org and request letters of support be addressed to Virginia Governor Ralph Northam and the Secretary of the Commonwealth, Kelly Thomason, be sent to Dusty's legal counsel. And for anyone interested, we'll link Dusty's website, the petitions, and where to send the letters in our show notes. In the meantime, we'll keep an eye on Dusty's case, and we'll let you know if we see any updates. And honestly, I think that kind of about wraps it up for this story.
Yeah, I think that was a long one, and we definitely need to wind down.
It's definitely time to wind down.
So much drama. Let's do it.
Avery, what mask are we doing tonight?
So this week, we're going back to a brand that we've tried before, Skin Rev, but we're trying the charcoal sheet mask. This Korean skincare mask helps draw out skin impurities and clean out clogged pores. The active ingredients improve skin texture and elasticity, leaving your skin clean and moisturized. So the two main ingredients, one, you may have already guessed, is the purifying active charcoal ingredient that clears out all the impurities from your pores, leaving your skin toned and breakout free. Now, the interesting one is the water of bamboo. It's an ingredient that East Asian cultures have been using for hundreds of years. It's known mostly for moisturizing and nourishing the skin. Bamboo is rich in natural silica, an ingredient that can help give your skin a radiant glow. In addition to having hydration benefits, silica aids the production of collagen, which firms skin and gives it a youthful bounce. You will notice that many Korean beauty products use some form of bamboo in them. So it's real common. And I started going down this like huge rabbit hole about all of the properties of bamboo and all the different ways that you can consume it, as well as like find it in skincare products. Mm-hmm. It's a long list. I'm sure we will see more of it later.
Interesting.
But so quickly, the steps: you wash your face and towel dry, put the sheet mask onto your face, and this one says leave it on for 10 to 20 minutes. When the time is up, simply remove the mask and pat the rest of the liquid into your face and neck.
And I prefer the term rubbing the juices.
Whatever makes you happy. But so that's it for the actual like details of it. We have already done the mask, and I think we're going to set our timer for 10 minutes because we have been talking a lot in this episode. Mm-hmm. But the timer is set, and let's chat. Yeah, let's wind down.
Chat with our wine. So since we've already done the mask, let's go ahead and just talk about what we thought about it. Uh-huh. And then get into it.
Okay.
I liked this mask because it was super soft. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember if it smelled like anything.
I thought it smelled good.
Okay. I don't remember it having like a super strong odor though.
No, it doesn't. But it does have like a really light, like perfumey smell. Like almost non-existent, but enough for me to be like, oh, that smells nice.
The thing I didn't like is it was really hard to peel apart.
Oh, and then because it's thin. I think it was the material of like the sheet mask itself.
Well, it was also like, and then once you got it peeled apart, after you put it on your face, there were still parts that you didn't realize were unpeeled.
Oh, yeah, like the nose part?
The nose part. Yeah. And then like the flaps on the like the bottom part of your face. Overall, I really liked it. But it was just like off-putting with like, I was like, oh, wait, why is my nose completely nude right now? Wait, there's a little part tucked in.
Yeah, you had to tell me. I didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
It probably would have dawned on me when I had it, like, fully on my face, but not at the moment.
No. But I, you other than that, that's like that's my only qualm with it. Is it was hard to unwrap and like hard to get off, whatever. Not off my face, but like off of itself.
Yeah.
As far as sheet masks go, I feel like they're pretty hard to fuck up. All the like the eye holes were a good shape, good size. I'm gonna give it an A minus.
Okay.
Because it's probably actually one of my favorite sheet masks that we've done.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to say the same thing because I agree. I thought the sheet mask itself, like whatever the material of it, was really soft and really nice. And I thought it smelled nice. So there's just nothing that was really off-putting in my mind. And in terms of a charcoal mask, it's one of the few that like, I don't feel like we did a charcoal mask, right? Like my skin feels really moisturized and hydrated, right? There's not like the you don't have to rub clay off your skin. So my skin just feels very like gently cleaned instead of something more abrasive. Like I feel like a lot of charcoal masks are because they're normally clay based.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
So I think this is a nice experience as long as, you know, our skin actually does like clear up afterwards.
Fingers crossed. I've been having some breakouts.
Yeah, it's like A all the way. So I liked it.
Okay, cool. So overall, it gets an A.
Yeah.
Awesome. I know I've got like a little notes on my phone with like some talking points.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you wanted to bring up?
Well, no, you go for it. We'll see if I have time.
Okay. First, I want to tell you on this. First of all, have you seen the newest To All the Boys I've Loved Before movie?
I have not watched it yet. It's okay. On my list. I'll probably watch it this weekend.
All right. So this isn't a spoiler, but it is something that happens in the movie.
Okay.
So at the very beginning of the movie, the Covey family goes to Korea and Lara Jean comes back and brings Peter like a bunch of stuff. And like one of the things is like they're sitting there like catching up and he's doing one of the face masks he brought her or she brought him.
Yeah.
And when he's done, he pats his face dry with a towel. It broke my heart. I was like, what are you doing? No,
leave the juices on your face.
Rub them in. But I just thought, like, that was really funny because, like, prior to starting this podcast, I wouldn't have thought twice about it. Just like, whatever.
Yeah, you would think of all of the people on that, in the cast even. Like, there's definitely someone that likes to do a face mask or two.
One would think.
Yeah, and been like, don't do that. That's crazy.
Yeah. The next thing I want to tell you, and this is the thing that I was like, I'm not going to tell you before we talk about it. It literally just says Vaseline elbows.
You've been Vaselining your elbows?
sort of. So my elbows were like have been like really dry, like they always get in the winter. And I was trying to like moisturize every night, and I like would moisturize right after I got out of the shower, and they were still super, super, super dry. So then I started trying like to do like a lotion and then putting Vaseline on it. And I talked to my mom about it, and she was like, oh, you're putting Vaseline on your elbows? I was like, well, yeah, I'm doing like a moisturizer first. And she goes, oh, okay. And like, she didn't say anything, but because of like the skepticism in her voice, I started doing just the Vaseline. And after 3 days, my elbows were fine.
Yeah. Vaseline is everything. It really is.
It's great.
I actually sometimes put Vaseline on my cuticles if they're really dry.
I was just like, what is happening?
Yeah. I think Vaseline solves everything. If like my lips are too dry, I'll do Vaseline.
I put Vaseline on my lips every night when I go to bed.
Really? Every night? Mm-hmm. That's a lot. I have Vaseline, like, chapstick. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not the same as just regular Vaseline.
Yeah. Got a little tub of the Vaseline with cocoa butter in it. And I'm like, oh, I go to bed.
Yeah, I used to have one of those little ones, the ones that, like, go in your purse of that kind. I just have regular Vaseline. But my issue with that is you got to stick your finger in it. I don't like chapsticks you stick your finger in.
Yeah,
like,
I don't
throughout the day.
Yeah, I don't feel like I would do that as like a carry around unless I was like, oh, I'm gonna like put this on my elbows throughout the day because they're hella dry. But
I think I got it as like my lips are so dry I really need something heavier, and that was like the only form it came in, like the time I was at the store.
And
I'm not a fan, especially someone that has like fingernails, not a fan of any chapstick where you have to put your finger in it, because then you have to dig it out of your fingernail and it's gross and it's definitely just not hygienic. And
All around sounds disgusting.
Well, it's been a long time, Nicole, so don't worry.
I'm not
doing it now.
I believe you. One last thing that I want to talk about before I give you control,
mm-hmm.
is I was perusing for movies the other night.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of the movie True Crime? It came out in 1996. It stars Alicia Silverstone.
No. I want to say yes because I've heard of True Crime, yeah. but not the movie True Crime. Oh, my God.
No, it's like such like a – it's a classic like 90s like cheesy movie, but it's about this girl who's like super into true crime and tries to solve a classmate's disappearance and murder
because
of her obsession. And I'm like – after I read the description, I was like, that would be me and Avery. I gotta watch this.
Yeah. Well, so you did watch it and you liked it?
I watched it and I liked it and I would watch it again with you.
Okay.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah. I totally want to watch it.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
We started watching, I guess it was last week, the HBO Dead Wives Club.
Mm-hmm.
And just in case anyone wants to watch something that's very like this, it's like Discovery ID, Investigation ID. What is it?
Investigation Discover.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of those things.
You had it right both times.
Yeah. But it's very much like that, but it's stories about, you know, people that get murdered that were the wife in the story. And yeah. we only watched the first one, but it was interesting.
Yeah, and it was about, what was her name? Nancy.
Natalie Wood.
Natalie. Why
wanted
to call her Nancy?
I mean, it's
Nancy. Natalie Wood.
Oh. Yeah, but I feel like that was a one and done, like forever, but like you can't just binge them.
Binge, yeah.
It's a lot of details, and there's a lot of, like, obvious commercial breaks in it, because the logo keeps coming back up. Makes you not want to binge it, if you ask me.
Agreed.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of things I've been watching, I finally watched that Britney Spears episode, the New York Times.
Yeah, the New York Times thing on Hulu.
I am so sad for her.
Me too.
I feel like I was just young enough to, like, always be in love with Britney, but never fully involved in those details. So I just knew all of the highlights, but I didn't know all the, like, noise in between.
Yeah. Same.
So that makes me really sad for her. And now I was, like, looking her up on Instagram, and I feel sad for her.
Yeah. No, I...
You know, she's so talented, especially, I mean, all of those snippets they had of her singing when she was really little.
Mm-hmm. She's always
could belt. Mm-hmm. That is awesome. And I feel like growing up, people always used to make comments about whether or not Britney Spears could really sing. Because she was so computerized just from, like, the songs she was doing at the time.
Yeah. I also feel like her and Christina Aguilera both got big around the same time. So they were always being compared.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like that was a big thing back then.
Yeah. But the parallels that people that were interviewed in that about the sexism at the time... It's something I never would have thought about because, you know, we grew up then and it wasn't talked about.
Yeah.
But looking back, they're so right. You know, Britney going to an interview and them asking if she's a virgin.
Nobody's got any business.
Yeah, excuse me, but has anyone in the history of the world ever asked a guy if he was a virgin?
No.
And I don't remember her name, but there was a lady that said she also worked with, like, every boy band, and she's like, they never got... Timer. They never got those types of questions or, like, that level of scrutiny, and it's just so sad.
No, and, I mean, I feel like it still happens today. Like, I've seen an interview with, I don't remember who it was, but she was somebody who was in the Marvel Universe, and they're like, oh, like, did you wear underwear with your jumpsuit? And they're like, are you going to ask him that?
Yeah.
Because if not, I'm not answering.
It's just so strange. I've never been fully privy to the level of sexism I grew up around.
Yeah.
And it's a little disheartening to see it, but it's better to see it than not. So I think it's
better to see and acknowledge and start to realize that there is a problem than to just turn a blind eye and just be like, oh, well, boys will be boys.
Well, so I heard a stat on a podcast. I don't know. It was one of the, like, many NPR podcasts I listened to. And they said that the U.S. is one of the countries that has the most denial around sexism. Of every country. I don't remember, like, the number she actually said, but we are at the top of people that deny it. And she's like, it's not just people, like, men denying that there's sexism. There's women denying the fact that there's sexism.
That kind of doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, just living in, like, a culture of general denial.
Living in just, like, your own little bubble of, like, well, this is how things are, like...
Yeah, it blows my mind. I mean, listening to, you know, people talk and just like older generations, I feel like you had to tell yourself certain things to just like get along, mm-hmm. and not get really upset about circumstances around you, not getting paid the same amount, not being treated the same way, not being treated in ways you wanted to be treated.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there is a level of older generations thinking we're all like whiners. Because
definitely.
But especially definitely. Because, you know, like they lived through it. They're like, if I can get through it, you can get through it. So like, why are you complaining? And
but that's not how life, like you shouldn't have to get through life.
Right.
I know. You know what I mean? Like, you should be able to enjoy your life. And
but yes, it's a larger problem. I think the Britney Spears, I think there's so many larger problems that we're talking about really openly now, and that's great. But Britney Spears really hit home just because, you know, she was a large part of my childhood.
Oh, yeah. And I feel like anybody our age, she was a large part of all of our childhoods. And
yeah.
I also feel like now that we're all adults, we can relate a lot more to the things that she went through and the things that mm-hmm. she's still going through. And it's like, sorry, wait, she's an adult and she can't control her own shit? How? Yet she's like,
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know we're done and we shouldn't be talking at this
point. It's our podcast. We can talk as long as we want. Shut up, Avery.
But the one interview, and I'm just going to keep taking it back to Britney, where the cameraman was explaining why she took her umbrella out and started, like, bashing on his car. Mm-hmm. I never heard any of that.
No, never hear that.
Right, and now that I heard it, even from him, he was just like, I don't know, like, I wasn't doing that much. You're like, but you were. Yeah. You were harassing her at her lowest point. Leave her alone. But after seeing that, I'm like, oh, I fully understand why she did all of those things. I remember thinking she was insane.
Yeah.
You know?
No, 100%.
Why would Britney go shave her head? Why did she just go attack some people and scream at them? That's not Britney, yep. I know.
Everyone thought that.
It's, yeah. I wish we were better informed, it said.
Yeah. Everyone was just so blinded by the way that things were being flipped and, like, presented to us. We just took it at face value. We didn't.
Yeah.
It's not like today where people are like, all right, well, this is what you're telling me. I'm going to try and do some research on it and see if you're full of shit or not.
That's true. That is very true. I do think people are more interested in the truth and less likely to just blindly believe.
Yeah.
100%. And that's good. That's good. Everyone yeah. should be able to research and formulate their own opinions, but knowledge should be the basis, not blind truth or yeah. trust.
Yeah. Don't just blindly trust whatever you read from wherever you read it.
Yeah.
The internet lies. I don't know if you knew that.
I mean, but not when we're looking up our story stuff. It tells the truth. Unless someone else has something to say, then we'll correct it. That's fine.
Okay. Like we said, we research it to the best of our abilities.
Yeah, and we try.
If you can prove that you are right, we will happily take your advice.
Mm-hmm.
But don't just come at us arguing.
Prove it. All right. I think we've really lost
focus yeah, here. I feel like we just like took a left turn down like Tangentville. I don't know. I think that probably should wrap it up.
Yeah.
I think we've probably had enough for this week. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. Send us all the emails at massmurderpodcast@gmail.com. And that's all for this week. Take care of yourselves. Sources for this week include AmericanSpecialOps.com, the Virginia Circuit Court Criminal Manual, Chapter 5, FreeDusty.com, PilotOnline.com, Richmond Times Dispatch via richmond.com, totalbeauty.com, the documentary Navy SEAL, Murderer, Framed, Target of Opportunity, which is a 2015 film on IMDb TV that we watched through Amazon Prime, and the Generation Y podcast episode 395, The Murder of Jennifer Evans, which aired on October 18th of 2020.